Welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 7th of April 2008, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear how the surfaces of solar cells are being made to look more like popcorn to boost their efficiency, how nanotechnology is being used to make flexible, high-tech stained glass, and how wireless nanotech is being used to treat cancer. In this week's Azo Nano interview, we find out how an Australian organisation is taking nanotechnology from the labs to industry. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. Nanotechnology could improve the life of the lithium batteries used in portable devices, including laptop computers, MP3 players, and mobile phones. Research demonstrates that carbon nanotubes can prevent such batteries from losing their charge capacity over time. The problem of slow degradation of lithium-ion batteries is usually due to the formation of a solid electrolyte interface film that increases the battery's internal resistance and prevents a full recharge. Researchers have suggested using silicon in the composition of the negative electrode material in lithium-ion batteries to improve charge capacity. However, this material leads to even faster capacity loss as it repeatedly alloys and then de-alloys during charge-discharge cycles. Researchers have now turned to carbon nanotubes to help them use silicon as the battery anode but avoid the problem of large volume change during alloying and de-alloying. By using a popcorn ball design, tiny kernels clumped into much larger porous spheres, researchers at the University of Washington are able to manipulate light and more than double the efficiency of converting solar energy to electricity. Dye-sensitized solar cells are more flexible, easier to manufacture, and cheaper than existing solar technologies. Researchers have tried various rough surfaces and achieved higher and higher efficiencies. Current lab prototypes can convert just over one-tenth of the incoming sun's energy into electricity. This is about half as efficient as the commercial silicon-based cells used in rooftop panels and calculators. The UW researchers did not attempt to maximise the overall efficiency of a dye-sensitised solar cell to match or beat these previous records. Instead, they focused on developing new approaches and compared the performance of homogeneous rough surfaces with a clumping design. Smaller grains have bigger surface area per volume and thus absorb many more rays. Embryonic stem cell therapies have been proposed for regenerative medicine and tissue replacement after injury or disease. However, the inability of stem cells to efficiently develop into the desired specific cell type, such as muscle, skin, blood vessels, bone, or neurons, now limit the potential clinical utility of this therapy. New research shows that delivering molecules within aggregates of embryonic stem cells via biodegradable microspheres enhances the efficiency and purity of differentiation, which is the process the cells undergo to become more specialized. Because physical interactions between stem cells is critical during embryonic development, most laboratory growth methods allow the cells to aggregate in three-dimensional clumps called embryoid bodies in order to differentiate. The new method focuses on incorporating the differentiation factors directly into the cell aggregates in order to have a more controlled process. The research team fabricated biodegradable polymer microspheres that could contain certain growth factors, proteins, or other small molecules. Carbon nanotubes are promising materials for many high-technology applications due to their exceptional mechanical, thermal, chemical, optical, and electrical properties. Now researchers at Northwestern University have used metallic nanotubes to make thin films that are semi-transparent, highly conductive, flexible, and come in a variety of colours, with an appearance similar to stained glass. These results could lead to improved high-tech products such as flat panel displays and solar cells. Transparent conductors are materials that are optically transparent yet electrically conductive. These materials are commonly utilised as electrodes in flat panel displays, touchscreens, solid-state lighting and solar cells. With pressure for energy-efficient devices and alternative energy sources increasing, the worldwide demand for transparent conductive films is also rapidly increasing. Utilising a technique known as density gradient ultracentrifugation, the researchers have produced carbon nanotubes with uniform electrical and optical properties. Thin films formulated from these high-purity carbon nanotubes possess tenfold improvements in conductivity compared to pre-existing carbon nanotube materials. Superinsulation may sound like a marketing gimmick for a drafty attic or winter coat, but it's actually a newly discovered fundamental state of matter created by scientists at the US Department of Energy's Argonne National Laboratory in collaboration with several European institutions. This discovery both opens new directions of inquiry in condensed matter physics and breaks ground for a new generation of microelectronics. An international team of scientists from Argonne, Germany, Russia and Belgium have fashioned a thin film of titanium nitride, which they then chilled to near absolute zero. When they tried to pass a current through the material, the researchers noticed that its resistance suddenly increased by a factor of 100,000 once the temperature dropped below a certain threshold. The same sudden change also occurred when the researchers decreased the external magnetic field. Like superconductors, superinsulators could eventually find their way into a number of products, including circuits, sensors, and battery shields. Fullerenes, also fondly known as buckyballs, are showing an ugly side. Since being discovered in 1985, the hollow carbon atoms have been adapted for nanotechnology and biomedical applications ranging from electronics to carriers of imaging materials. It appears that the hydrophobic or water-hating carbon molecules clump together in water, forming aggregates of thousands of molecules. And there are reports that these aggregates can be toxic to microorganisms and even fish should they escape from processing into surface water and groundwater. Now researchers at Virginia Tech have demonstrated that this behaviour can be changed by the addition of citric acid, although the good news and bad news of this recent discovery has yet to be determined. Engineers at Purdue University are creating a wireless device designed to be injected into tumours to tell doctors the precise dose of radiation received and locate the exact position of tumours during treatment. The information would help to more effectively kill tumours. Because organs and tumours shift inside the body during treatment, a new technology is needed to tell doctors the exact dosage of radiation received by a tumour. The prototype is enclosed in a glass capillary small enough to inject into a tumour with a syringe. Whereas conventional imaging systems can provide a three-dimensional fix on a tumour's shifting position during therapy, these methods are difficult to use during radiation therapy, are costly, and sometimes require X-rays, which can damage tissue when used repeatedly. The new devices use radio frequency identification, or RFID, technology, which does not emit damaging X-rays. Nanovirucides Incorporated said that preliminary animal trials of the company's HIV therapeutic candidates have begun at a biosafety level 3 laboratory facility in Boston, Massachusetts. The initial results are expected before the end of next month. The purpose of this initial study is twofold: to assess therapeutic efficacy and to determine the appropriate dosages of a drug that should be used in the later animal study. Nanovirucides Incorporated is currently developing injectable formulations for systemic viral diseases such as HIV, human flu, bird flu, Ebola, rabies, and dengue, as well as eye drops for virulent eye diseases. Carnegie Mellon University's Nadine Aubrey and colleague Pushpendra Singh of the New Jersey Institute of Technology are leading a research team to develop a manufacturing strategy that could improve technologies used in tissue engineering and information technology. Aubrey, head of Carnegie Mellon's Mechanical Engineering Department, and Singh, an engineering professor at NGIT, have developed a new way of herding nano or microparticles into highly ordered two-dimensional lattices, with adjustable spacing between the particles. The team's research shows how the use of electric fields and fluid-to-fluid interfaces can be judiciously used to develop new materials with special properties to increase the efficiency of drug delivery patches, solar cells, and the next generation of high-performance computing. In this week's nanotechnology interview, Asa Nano's Cameron Chai finds out how an Australian organisation is taking nanotechnology from the labs to industry and how they're partnering nanotechnology developers with traditional manufacturers so they can gain a competitive advantage and create new products and services.
This is Cameron Chai here from asonano.com, and I've got with me at the moment Dr. John Capillaris, who's the Deputy CEO of the Australian Institute of Commercialisation. How are you doing today, John?
Well, thank you, Cameron.
Good to hear. So tell me, John, what does the Australian Institute of Commercialisation do?
The Australian Institute for Commercialisation is a national independent organisation that works with entrepreneurs, small businesses, research organisations and government agencies to help them to commercialise their research outcomes.
So what sort of organisation are you? Are you a government-based organisation or a private organisation?
The AIC was originally funded through the Smart State Strategy via the Queensland Government, but since then we've had support from other state governments and the federal government.
So you can help companies anywhere across Australia?
Generally we help organisations across Australia. Our head office is in Brisbane, we have offices in Sydney, Melbourne and South Australia. We also are assisting some organisations in Tasmania.
Excellent. So how does the AIC work and who is it geared towards?
It's an interesting question because we have such a wide client base. We do focus on entrepreneurs who have a great idea and want to take that idea to market. We're also focused on small to medium enterprises who are really struggling to grow and become the next ResMed or Cochlear in Australia. In addition, we also help the research organisations. We work with commercial offices of universities to help identify opportunities in industry and help bring industry to research organisations. And finally, we also work with government agencies who are innovating and have R&D programs, and they want to take those ideas to market through commercialising individual projects or taking the intellectual property that they have into developing an industry sector such as the ICT industry.
So you do more than just help researchers, you also can help existing businesses then?
In particular, existing businesses that are technology based and have an innovation need.
So can assist companies in locating knowledge and intellectual property that's existing overseas?
One of our programs called TechFast is about identifying intellectual property and transferring that intellectual property into small to medium enterprises. But we use a market pull approach. What does that mean? We go and identify technology receptive small to medium enterprises that are hungry to grow. We identify what their technology needs are. Then we farm the research sector across Australia to identify intellectual property. We then facilitate the technology or knowledge transfer from the research sector to the small to medium enterprise. And we have up to $100,000 available, 50% of that funded and subsidised by the federal government. If that intellectual property is not available within Australia, then we look at our international linkages to try to identify intellectual property knowledge and technology overseas.
So the AIC, have they had any recent success stories that you can tell us about in commercialising Australian technology?
We've had a number of success stories. We've helped over 20 small to medium enterprises access intellectual property and knowledge from the research sector. In particular, a Victorian-based company called Fred Bergman Healthcare came to us with a particular need around incontinence nappies. Currently, incontinence nappies are used by the elderly to help accommodate any accidents they have. What the current issue was that you didn't know whether an elderly person wearing an incontinence nappy had a problem or not. So nursing staff would have to go and check physically to see whether their incontinence nappy was wet. So what their particular need was to identify sensors that we could actually incorporate within the incontinence nappy. And we searched the intellectual property space and research sector in Australia and identified that the capability existed within CSIRO. So we were able to identify technology in particular research organisations that we could bring into Fred Bergman to incorporate sensors within their incontinence nappy.
So do you also actively search and look for technologies that might exist in Australia that could use help with commercialisation?
Yes, definitely. We have and we continue to establish a database, a national database of intellectual property capability of various projects within the research sector and outside that research sector. So if an organisation is looking for a bit of technology, a bit of knowledge or intellectual property, we could quickly try to identify where that intellectual property may exist. In addition to that, we also help organisations who produce intellectual property, such as research organisations, and working closely with the commercial offices of the universities, help them to access industry partners to try to better commercialise their technology.
All right, John, sounds like you're doing a lot of good stuff for Australian industry.
Yes, so really enjoying it at the moment because it's an opportunity for us to really become involved in industry development and economic development in Australia.
And John, seeing as we're at a nanotechnology conference right now, what do you guys do to help nanotechnology organisations?
Our focus in nanotechnology, again, is based on our TechFast program. We have a focus around assisting organisations access the enabling nanotechnologies that exist in the research organisations. Our TechFast manager in Victoria, his sole focus is around nanotechnology. So what does that mean? We're trying to identify where nanotechnology could actually assist traditional businesses, in particular manufacturing businesses, to access this new enabling technology to stay competitive and to grow new products and services. Nanotechnology is not just for nanotechnology companies. We believe that nanotechnology could actually influence mainstream businesses to better commercialise, to find their competitive advantage and bring out new products and services.
So you're currently involved with many nanotechnology companies?
We have relationships with a number of nanotechnology companies that are commercialising nanotechnology, and we're looking for new technologies that could benefit those particular organisations. But we're also very well linked into the research sector in nanotechnology to be able to identify intellectual property, knowledge and know-how that could benefit traditional businesses.
So hopefully in the not-too-distant future we can see some nanotechnologies coming out of Australia and going worldwide thanks to some AIC work then?
Yes, definitely. We're looking forward to developing a number of case studies, successful case studies, in commercialising nanotechnology.
Excellent. So, well, it sounds like lots of upside for Australian nanotech if you guys can get it all sorted out for them.
Very much. You need that facilitation, you need that independent intermediary organisation coming in and trying to facilitate the technology and knowledge transfer from researchers to industry using a market pull approach.
I guess that's where it's all coming from at the moment. From in nanotech, it's all coming from the research guys at the moment.
Exactly, and we've got to convince mainstream industry that there are benefits and advantages to be able to take from the nanotechnology research organisations and try to incorporate it within their existing products and services, but also to develop new products and services.
Well, hopefully soon we'll have some Australian companies out there challenging the likes of L'Oreal and their mates.
We'd definitely like to see that vision.
So for anybody out there who's an Australian company who's got some IP, some knowledge out there that they think might be worth commercialising, they should probably come and speak to you guys then.
Yes. Thank you, Cameron.
All right, John, thanks very much for your time.
Acer Nano Business News. Secretary of Energy Samuel Bottom presented the Sandia LANL Centre for Integrated Nanotechnologies with the Department of Energy Award for Achievement at the biannual DOE Project Management Workshop in Washington, D.C., held in late March. The $75 million project, completed on schedule and under budget, was one of two DOE engineering and construction projects to receive recognition in project management. Oxford Instruments PLC has announced the acquisition of Technologies and Devices International Incorporated, a world leader in the development of hydride vapor phase epitaxy technology and processes. The acquisition is part of the strategy put in place by Chief Executive Jonathan Flint to acquire complementary technologies and double the size of the group over 5 years. TDI's technology enables Oxford Instruments' plasma technology to expand the range of products it already supplies to the high-brightness, light-emitting diode market. HB LEDs are a very low-energy light source, and their widespread use will significantly reduce carbon emissions. Oxford Instruments is committed to supporting the conservation of energy resources and the preservation of the environment, and is delighted that this acquisition will strengthen and support this focus. The latest generation of dual polarizing interferometer from Fairfield, the Analyte 4D, sets the performance standard for laboratory-based real-time biophysical characterizations of proteins, lipids, and other biomolecules, providing quantitative structural data to support world-class research in the life sciences. The unique information generated by the Analyte 4D is invaluable for many applications, such as the elucidation of disease mechanisms and how to inhibit them. The Analyte 4D allows researchers to define how biomolecular conformation affects function and how to mediate function with structurally relevant binding partners. A new capability to measure the order within lipid bilayers, only available in the Analyte 4D, opens a new market in the design of lipid-mediated bioassays. Budget Sensors, a Bulgarian manufacturer of silicon and silicon nitride probes, as well as AFM accessories for atomic force microscopes, announces the introduction of a range of diamond-like carbon-coated AFM probes. All basic types of Budget Sensors silicon AFM probes are now available with a DLC coating on the tip side of the cantilever. The hard DLC coating offers high durability and decreased tip wear, thereby increasing tip life. SUS Microtech announced the installation of its PM300WLR, the world's most advanced 300mm wafer-level reliability test system, at a leading Japanese manufacturer of semiconductor devices. It will be used for testing the reliability of current and next-generation devices. As the technology and design of semiconductor devices advance, the need to test their reliability and gauge their lifetime becomes more acute. Micromeretics' new TriStar 23020 is a fully automated three-station surface area and porosity analyzer capable of increasing the speed and efficiency of quality control analysis, with the accuracy, resolution and data reduction to meet most research requirements. The TriStar 2 combines versatility in analysis methods, data reduction and reporting to allow the user to optimize analyses to specific applications. Nanometrics Incorporated, a leading supplier of advanced metrology equipment to the semiconductor industry, introduced the latest addition to its Atlas metrology system platform, the Atlas XP. The Atlas XP incorporates a number of system improvements which result in smaller target measurement capabilities, increased precision, and improved long-term measurement stability and system reliability. Combining the very latest small-spot UV spectroscopic ellipsometer and normal incidence spectroscopic reflectometry, the Atlas XP addresses 45nm and 32nm precision and fleet matching requirements. Well, that was Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 7th of April 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. Yeah.